Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. Thank you for listening to the program. Appreciate it very much. The number to dial to be on the program is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Also want to say thank you once again for your incredible generosity when it came to our pledge drive last week. It's over now. We're done. But we're so grateful to you, those of you who participated. We were able to make our goal and a little bit more over the top of that, which was awesome. If you didn't get a chance to participate, it's still available by going to relevantradio.com or using the Relevant Radio app. But once again, a profound word of gratitude and thanks to you for your participation. Also, I want to make you aware that you can take your Lent to the next level with Father Rocky's Lenten Lessons on the Mass, which are free to you each day in your mailbox. The outpouring and enthusiasm for last year's in-depth walkthrough of the Mass prompted us to produce even more brand new exclusive video from Father Rocky that will help enrich your passion for the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. This video series goes even deeper behind the scenes from the moment you enter the chapel or the church until the final blessing. From Ash Wednesday to Easter morning, you can illuminate your Lent with daily insights that you'll only find right here on Relevant Radio by going to relevantradio.com/Lent and sign up for Father Rocky's brand new, Lenten Lessons on the Mass. Do it today, relevantradio.com/Lent, and then get ready to learn, live, and love the Mass even more. All free, no strings attached. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Let's go back to the phones. Let's start off with Edith now in Illinois. Hi, Edith.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a huge problem. I don't even know how to confess it. Okay. I was involved. This is hard, but you're neutral and you don't know me. I was involved with a priest for many years and I loved him more than anything. Mm-hmm. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks this morning. He lied to me. He told me he was in the confessional. He wasn't. I'm like, wow.
He told you in the confessional what? Could you tell
me? He told me he was in the confessional, so I went there to be in confession, but there is no confession today, this morning. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. It's like, what have I been doing? He lied to me about this. What else has he been lying to me about? And I don't know how to confess it. My soul is in grave mortal danger now.
Okay, I can help you.
I don't know what to do. Okay.
I can help you, Edith. I can help you. Okay, there are a few
things. I was
a soldier.
I was in the Army, so I take orders really, really well.
Okay. Well, God bless you, Edith. So I'm not going to give you any orders.
I'm so sorry. I was a good soldier when I was young,
All right. So let me just hear me out here. The first thing that you can do, number one, is tell the Lord you're sorry. It sounds like you're probably already doing that. In your heart, Lord, I'm truly sorry for this sin and all my other sins, and I don't want to do it again, and I'm sorry because I love you, and I know I shouldn't have done it. Okay. Do you know how to make the act of contrition, that prayer, oh my God, I'm heartily sorry? Do you know that prayer?
Oh my God, yes.
Okay. So pray that prayer, Edith, in a heartfelt way, knowing that the Lord loves you, and even though you've done something really wrong, He loves you and He wants to forgive you, and He will forgive you. Okay? So that's the first step. You have that part clear to do the act of contrition?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes.
The second step is go to confession, sacramental confession. Do not go to that priest. Do not go back to him. We'll come back to this issue in a minute. Go to another parish. All parishes will have confession available on Saturday. Some parishes have confessions available every day, and if you do a little bit of searching, you can find one. Chances are there's one near you that you could get to confession
right down the street.
Soon. Okay, perfect.
Okay.
Okay, so when you go to confession, you want to make a good examination of conscience ahead of time. So really ponder and think, and if it's helpful to write it down or put a note on your phone, however you want to do it, do an inventory of not just this sin, but any other sins that may have happened along the way, whatever they may be, that are serious sins since your last good confession, when you actually said everything in that confession, however long ago that is. And then when you go to confession to a different priest, you let him know that you were caught up in this relationship. I don't want to ask you any details about it, but whatever the relationship was, obviously it was inappropriate and crossed boundaries. And if it was something more than merely a platonic relationship, you'd want to, you know, you'd want to let the priest know the nature of the relationship with the priest. And if that involved committing certain sins together, you would want, you don't want to give any gory details. You don't want to say anything that might, you know, cause the priest you're going to confession to have problems with his imagination. So just keep it really black and white and simple. And if, let's say, that you and this other priest had committed a particular sin together, you would want to say, as far as I know, it happened this many times. Or as best as I can remember, it happened this many times. Things like that. You want to be clinical and not give lots of unnecessary detail. Once you have gone to confession and you've received the Lord's forgiveness, then you need to report this relationship to the bishop. And the way to do that is you write a letter to the bishop, you tell him your name, tell him, here's what happened, here's the priest that it happened with. Did it ever occur, Edith, did he ever absolve you or try to absolve you in confession after?
No.
He never did that. Okay. So no. It wasn't like he used that sacrament to try to tell you it's okay, you're forgiven, anything like that?
No, it wasn't okay. Like that. It was just like a normal relationship evolved.
Got it.
Okay. You know, I'm in my 50s. It wasn't like I'm single.
And it took place over a period of years?
Sure. Yes. Okay. Several years.
You need to take... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Edith.
I want to say 10 years.
Okay. You need to take this to the bishop. And you need to let him know...
That would destroy him. I don't want to destroy anybody.
I'm sure you don't. And I don't want to see anyone destroyed, but he has done this to himself.
Would.
It's a violation of his priestly promises of celibacy and continence. It's a violation of his promise to his bishop to be genuine in ministry,
okay.
etc. So, yes, it's a sad thing, and I don't want to see anybody needlessly hurt, but he's done this to himself. He's victimized you. Now, to whatever extent you have responsibility, only God knows. That's why you take care of that in the sacrament of confession. But this is an egregious offense on his part. And the other thing is, if he was doing this with you, it's entirely possible he was doing this with other people.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my. Yeah. I hope not. That just makes it even more worse. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So this is why your bishop should know. So my advice, Edith, after you've done these other things, then you write an email, or if you prefer a regular paper letter, but notify the bishop and give him whatever details are necessary, and then he, of course, will follow up on that with you, I'm sure.
Thank you so much. You're wonderful. You know, I love your program. I listen to it all. I dropped my kids off at Catholic school, and they just, turn it off. I'm like, I can't. It's the only time with the Lord I get. You know? I love him so much. You know, I gotta tell you one more thing is, I died, two Januaries ago. And I actually was separated from my body, and I saw them working on my body, and I didn't see anything. And then I called to my children, and I didn't remember anything of this world. Nothing. I was going up to the left really super fast, and I had no memory of my job or my car or this life. I go, where am I going? I want to go with you, just like my personality is. And I heard, no. I got pushed back in my body, and I woke up in a hurt world of pain.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, who knows what that was? Maybe that was something from the Lord. Maybe that was something else. I don't know. But you're here now, and just keep remembering God loves you and he wants to forgive you. So again, my advice would be follow those steps and let it play out. Edith, thank you for the phone call. I'm sure many people right now are adding you to their prayer list because it's a difficult situation you're in. So we will pray for you. Thank you, Edith. 888-914-9149. I'll tell you what, Cyrus, you never know what you're going to hear on the Patrick Madrid Show. Am I right or am I right?
You're not wrong. I've heard that out-of-body experience a few times. What do you think about that?
I'm inclined to believe it. There is a book that I read. It's called Science in the Afterlife. The Afterlife Experience. It's a scientific analysis of out-of-body experiences. It's not religious. It looks at it from the standpoint of what can the science tell us? And it seems to me to be a documented, scientifically verifiable phenomenon that it defies an explanation. As the atheists say, you don't have a soul, then it would be impossible. But if you have a soul, if there is an afterlife.
That's right.
You know?
Yep. Yeah. Very interesting stuff.
I agree. Yeah, everybody, say some prayers for Edith. She's in a really difficult spot. And say some prayers for that priest, whoever he may be. Because he's put himself in a very difficult spot. It's going to get a lot more difficult for him. But say some prayers. Let's go to Joanna in Fountain Valley, California. Good morning, Joanna.
Patrick, long time. I have missed you on this call, Patrick. This is Joanna.
Thank you.
I hope you remember me.
I do.
So, I know. I miss you. Miss you a lot.
Thank you.
Anyway, so happy. I've been waiting for you since you opened the show, but it's worth waiting. First of all, you know, I know that you go to the Holy Land, you know, for a tour. So I hope someday I can join you with my son.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, I will look out for your message. Anyway, and that will lead me to the next question. So I have an 8-year-old son. I had him very late. I had him a month before I turned 42. I've been married for 24 years. God bless me with him. And, you know, I can tell you the whole story. You know, I went to Lourdes. I went to Turkey. I went to the Virgin Mary house. Virgin Mary helped me with my son, and no doubt about it. So anyway, you know, he's an awesome kid. He's very smart. I'm not just saying it because every parent thinks their kid's smart. Mm-hmm. But I kind of struggle a little bit on, you know, I send him to Bible, you know, his first year, you know, first communion. I ask him a lot.
Are you concerned about him in some way, Joanna? Do you have some?
Yes. Yes.
What is that? What are you concerned about?
I am concerned that, you know, how do I instill the faith in him? He go to church with me every weekend. I mean, I even bought the book that you recommended, Parenting for Eternity.
Yeah.
So anyway, how do I mean, I want to teach him, you know, like empathize, you know, love people. I don't know. I'm not saying he doesn't, but I feel like, you know, he it's all about playing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But my husband seemed like he's more understanding for him because he said who at 8 years old doesn't want to play with friends? Yeah. You know, who's 8 years old that talk about, you know, God or talk about loving people, you know. So I know you have tons of experience, you know. You were blessed with 11 kids, so I wanted to get your advice.
Sure, I'm happy to give it, although I'd like to preface it by saying I am no parenting expert. I have some experience, but it doesn't make me an expert. So there have been many times, Joanna, when I was a younger father, and I found myself completely clueless. What should I do in this situation? What should I do? Lord, how do I handle this? I don't know what to do. So don't feel bad. Because I think all of us at one time or another have those moments, maybe like you're having right now. So I guess the first bit of advice would be, Joanna, what I tried to do is just simply in those moments when I didn't know where to turn or what to do or how to handle a situation, I just asked the Lord, just please show me, just illuminate my mind, Lord. and give me the wisdom or give me the prudence to know what is the right thing to do. And then to try to follow through and see how things turned out. So some things you learn by experience and you realize, okay, that's not a good thing to do, or this is a good thing to do. So a few things that we tried with our children was, and I know I come back to this from time to time, there's a movie called Jesus of Nazareth. It's a miniseries, maybe six hours long. Came out in, I think it was 1977 or 78. It's extremely powerful, and it is a vivid depiction of the life of Christ. Now, obviously, your eight-year-old's not going to sit through 6 hours of it, but every so often you could say, hey, let's watch, you know, the section about the birth of Jesus, or let's watch the section about Jesus doing his public ministry, or let's see Jesus at the Last Supper. And I'll tell you, I really believe that over the many years that Nancy and I would watch this, because we had it first on VHS tape, and we would watch it with the kids at certain times of the year. So around Christmas time, we'd watch the part where Jesus was born. During Lent, we would watch the Last Supper and the Passover. And I believe that it helped my children to understand better who Jesus is, because they can see it. And now, obviously, it's an actor. It's not real, but it seems very real, and it's very emotionally impactful. And that's why, I know it may sound corny, but I think, at least looking at my kids, that it really helped them to be able to understand Jesus more clearly. Second thing, totally off topic of that, would be to the extent that your son, and this is true, I think, of most kids nowadays, to the extent that your son is absorbed in screens, whether it's gaming systems or the Switch, the Nintendo Switch, or God forbid that he has a smartphone. You're too wise of a mom, Joanna, to have given your son a smartphone, so I know it doesn't affect you. But many other people stupidly give their children smartphones, and that's like handing them a stick of dynamite. That's true of tablets. If there's no restriction on where they can go, it's a real nightmare, and it will not end well for children. But if he is not deeply absorbed, or let me put it this way, if he is deeply absorbed in screens, I would try to limit that so that you can make room for religious instruction. So take him to Mass during the week if you have an opportunity. Take him to adoration. Teach him this: Jesus is really here. He's really here. Give him books on the lives of the saints. I was deeply affected as a lad by the story of Saint Dominic Savio. I wish I could say that I lived my life the way he did. I didn't, unfortunately, but I was deeply impacted by his story, and I think he interceded for me in many ways in my youth, because I saw him as a kind of ideal to be imitated, even though I fell way short of that. The lives of the saints, the martyrs, those who suffered for the faith, I gorged myself on that stuff when I was young, because my parents had those books in their library, and I'm glad of it, because it enabled me to really get beyond my own personal experience of being a Catholic and going to Mass on Sunday. And I mean, that's very limited, but it helped me tremendously to be able to tap into the 2,000 years worth of the men, women, boys, and girls who were great saints, and the things that they did, and all of it. It was really helpful to me, and it helped me understand Jesus. Because why would anyone do those things if Jesus wasn't really who he claimed to be, God? If he didn't really establish this church, if he didn't really promise us happiness in heaven and salvation and all the rest of it, you know, then none of it makes sense. And so the lives of the saints were hugely formative for me. So I encourage you to consider doing that. You know, go on a buying spree. Get the story of Father Miguel Pro, the young Jesuit priest who was executed by a firing squad in November of 1927 because he was ministering to the Mexican Catholics who were being persecuted by the godless atheist Freemasonic government. He was ministering to them undercover, and he would wear disguises, and he was very daring, and the story is just incredible, and it's a true story, every bit of it. And then finally, he was betrayed and framed for a crime he didn't commit, and he wound up being executed by the firing squad. stories like that, even though maybe at 8 years old, he's maybe not quite ready for that, but in another year or two, he certainly would be. These are all things I would do. You know, pray the rosary with him. You know, if you're not in the habit of praying the rosary daily, I would do that. These are just suggestions off the top of my head, but I think any or all of them can be beneficial to you. And, you know, the main thing is you're a great mother, Joanna, and you love your son. So I hope and pray that some of this advice will be useful to you. I really do. Thank you, Joanna. Great talking to you. And I look forward to the next conversation. I'll be right back.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Ay, ay, ay. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, and happy Taco Tuesday. Muchas enchiladas, everybody. Let's go to Elaine in Star, Idaho. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, Patrick. How are you?
I am well.
Question back on the baptisms. You were saying that they were non-valid, pretty much.
Yep.
But it just dawned on me, what about invalid? Thank you. But what about, like, seeing the parents being there and the godparents? They obviously desired the baptism. So isn't there a baptism of desire?
Well, there is, but that's not it. So baptism of desire does not refer to any third party desiring baptism for the person. Baptism of desire, the term baptism of desire, refers to the person himself desiring baptism but not being able to receive it. So let's say you were not a Catholic, you had never been baptized, and you said, you know what, I love Jesus, I want to follow him, I want to be a member of the Catholic Church, and I seek to be baptized. And you were in the process in some way or another, it didn't necessarily have to be a formal process, but you had determined that you were going to be baptized and you were trying to move in that direction, and then you got killed somehow, hit by a car or whatever. The church recognizes that your votum, that's the Latin term that's used in this theological issue, your votum or your desire, your choice of wanting to be baptized would constitute for you baptism of desire. But baptism of desire itself has nothing to do with other people desiring baptism for you. Now, it is true, and it is obviously integral to the sacrament of baptism for infants, that the church desires this, that Jesus, of course, desires it, because he said to the apostles, do not stop the little children from coming unto me. And it's also important that the parents and godparents desire this, because after all, the little baby, in the case of an infant, he can't make the decision because he doesn't understand. So kind of like the paralytic who was lowered down through the roof for Jesus to heal, and Jesus did heal him, it was his friends who did this for him. His friends brought him to Jesus and lowered him down through the roof. Could you imagine if that was your house and you had to pay the bill to re-roof your house? So there's a symbol there, or a parallel rather, that the parents and the godparents are kind of like those friends of the paralytic who bring the paralytic to Jesus for healing and forgiveness. So in that sense, baptism is certainly important, but it's not the same as baptism of desire. Hence, if it's an invalid baptism, like the sad situation of the priest baptizing, saying, we baptize you, even though everybody standing there is sincere and desires the baptism of the child, it remains an invalid baptism. That's just the fact of the matter. Because in order to be valid, you have to have the proper form and the proper matter. So the proper form in the case of baptism is water. The proper form is the words of baptism. I baptize you in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. The proper matter has to be water. And if either or both of those are missing, then it's not valid, which is a great shame.
Okay.
But that's the nature of it. Can I give you an analogy, Elaine, that might help it make a little more sense? I'm assuming
Hello?
I can. Yeah. I'd like to give you an analogy that might be helpful. So imagine that you picked out your dream house and you had the money to buy it and the seller sold it to you and you went into escrow, and when it came time to close on the house, you're there at the bank and you're signing all the papers and you've got your money and they hand you the key and you take possession of the house. And then somebody says, uh-oh, wait a minute, we just found that in the record search that the seller of the house doesn't own the legal title to the house. Somebody else does. And you say, well, wait a minute. We have a sale. This is my house now. And I have the key and I paid my money and we signed all the paperwork. And the law would say, no, it actually is null and void, because if the seller of the house did not have the legal right to sell it, then there is no sale. And so it would invalidate everything that you went through. And it would mean that even though all the pieces were in place and everything sort of clicked, still it wasn't a valid sale and you don't actually own that house. That's why it's so important to make sure that these sacraments are celebrated validly. Does that make more sense?
Oh, that's so sad. Yeah, it's just so sad to me.
Yeah,
just all those people.
But on the other side, though, there is a bright side, and I'd like to emphasize this. I don't want people to live in fear. I don't want you to feel, uh-oh, maybe my baptism is invalid. There's no reason to assume that outside of some information that would show that it was invalid. In the vast majority, the vast, vast majority of baptisms are performed validly. It doesn't mean that this isn't necessarily a widespread problem, but it doesn't affect most people.
Yeah.
You know, so I wouldn't want you to be fearful that, maybe I don't have
no,
valid
I'm
baptism.
Not. I just think it's just so sad for 20 years that people, who knows?
Yeah.
You know,
it is very sad.
That I can just pray for them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you're ever at a baptism and you see something goofy, hate to put it that way, but if it's not the valid formula of baptism, you should say something. That was a
valid. Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, and you have a great day.
Yeah, thanks. Take care, Elaine. 888-914-9149. How about Jill now in Arkansas? Good morning, Jill.
Good morning. I have a question concerning my own baptism.
Okay.
When I was baptized, I remember the priest saying, let's go do a practice baptism.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he did it, I'm pretty sure he did say, I baptize you. And he said my full name, in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.
Okay.
And the my in-laws that brought me to my baptism, they were sitting in the pew. They weren't standing at the baptismal font with me.
How old were you when you were baptized?
About 21, 22.
Okay. So he said, in essence, Jill, whatever your last name is, Jill Smith, I baptize you in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. And as he pronounced those words, he was pouring the water over your head, or you were being immersed in the water?
He poured it over my forehead and had mm-hmm. a cotton ball or Kleenex to catch the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was valid. And now, the question, though, is he said, let's do a practice. Did he actually practice baptism with you and then after that actually baptize you, or what happened exactly?
No, he just said, let's go do a practice baptism. And that's always bothered me.
Here's why there's a question mark hanging over this, Jill, is because, yes, there must be the valid form and the valid matter, but there also must be the intention to baptize. And that's why I'm scratching my head. I've never even heard of a priest saying, let's do a practice baptism. There's no need to practice it because it's a simple procedure. So if he practiced it and didn't intend to baptize you because he was intending to baptize you when he was doing it, quote unquote, for real, that would be a problem. And you're sure there was no actual baptism after that practice one? That was the only one he did?
No.
And you sure he said, let's do a practice baptism?
Yes, that's what he said.
All right. Well, in that case, if I were you, because that doubt is introduced now, is the priest still alive? Would you have a way of getting back in touch with him?
Well, I don't know, and I don't even remember his name.
Okay. Well, okay, fair enough. So if I were you, and there was no way for me to check back with the priest and send him an email and say, hey, I know this sounds really unusual, but long ago when you baptized me, I remember you saying, let's do a practice baptism. Did you mean it? Did you intend to baptize me? Or was it just you were just going through the motions without the intention of baptizing, but just sort of like simulating the sacrament? So since you have no way of asking him that, my advice would be make an appointment with your parish priest and tell him what you told me and say that, you know, it was suggested to you that maybe you should be conditionally baptized. In that case, what the priest would do is he would say, Jill, and he doesn't have to use your name, if you have not already been baptized, I baptize you in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. So if the first baptism was not valid, this one is. If the first baptism was valid, this one is superfluous because you've already been validly baptized. But either way, you have nothing to worry about. You will know with certitude that whichever way, you know, when you get to eternity and you find out, it doesn't matter because you were covered either way, either with the first baptism or with the conditional baptism. And that, I would think, would give you a lot of peace of mind. Then you'll never have to wonder.
So you think I should have a conditional baptism?
Well, the reason I say this is because there's sufficient doubt. If the priest hadn't said, let's do a practice baptism, then I would say there's no doubt in my mind that it was a valid baptism. Because that third part is necessary, and that is the intention. Let's say that the priest was acting in a movie. Let's say he was hired to portray a priest in a movie baptizing a baby, and this is the scene where the priest is baptizing the baby, and he goes through the motions, he simulates the baptism for the purposes of the movie, let's just say. But he's not intending to baptize the baby or whoever the person is. He's just simulating this for the sake of the movie. That's not a valid baptism because he doesn't have the intention. Or if the priest is, let's say, teaching a class of seminarians, or maybe it's a deacon class and they're preparing for the diaconate. And in the course on the sacraments, there's a part where they actually learn how to celebrate Mass. They learn how to hear confessions. They learn how to baptize. So in a class setting like that, often there might be a doll, like a plastic doll, in which case there's no question that it's not a baptism. But let's just say there was no doll available and they decided to use a person, one of the seminarians maybe, to practice baptism. Well, there'd be no intention there to baptize. It's just simulation, and that's all. So if it weren't for the fact that the priest had said that, there'd be no doubt in my mind. But because he said that, at least to me, it seems like there's enough question that it would make sense to ask for a conditional baptism. And I think the priest would concur with me when you explain it to him.
Okay. And the sponsors, I mean, I guess my mother and father-in-law were my sponsors because they brought me there, but they didn't need to be standing at the baptismal font.
No. I mean, they should be in the proximity of the person being baptized, but that's not necessary for the validity of the baptism.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome, Jill. Be at peace. And know that this is a problem. If it is a problem, it may not be, but if it is, it's a problem that can easily be taken care of. No fuss, no muss.
Okay. Thank you. Right. I love your show.
Thanks, Jill. Bye. Good to talk to you. Let's go now to Judy. No, I'm sorry. Judy, I'm coming to you soon. Aaron in Los Angeles, welcome.
Hi, Mr. Madrid. I just wanted to say that St. Bernadette Parish you mentioned earlier really is something. My question is, I was at Mass a while ago at a different parish, and I saw the priest he did like a general absolution, and I remember hearing, I think from you, like that's not supposed to happen, or that's some kind of abuse. And yeah. So after Mass, I was just praying, like, Lord, please, you know, don't let me see this priest, because I don't think I have the courage to stand up. And that's when it kind of got me thinking, you know, at what point on our part as laity, at what point is it a sin of omission? Or, for example, in these baptisms, if I saw that, at what point is that a mortal sin or just omission in general? Thank you.
Oh, great question. And it's an interesting way to look at this issue. So for the sake of those who may not be familiar with what you're saying, if you saw a priest, let's say, but rather than me describe it, why don't you tell me what the circumstances were? Was it before Mass?
It was at the end of Mass, and I remember this priest had done it actually before when he had more people in confession than he could take. Mm-hmm. It was just like, I think like after the final blessing, he just did a general absolution. And yeah. We weren't going into battle, so I'm pretty sure that was not right.
Yeah, that would be wrong. That would be an illicit use of... The church does permit general absolution under some circumstances. It's a very good thing under some circumstances. The bombs are falling and people are huddled in the church during war, and it's possible that at any moment they might die. Well, the priest can't hear 500 confessions in that period of time, so he can lawfully grant general absolution to everybody. But that entails, as it would in any case with general absolution, it entails that the person, if he doesn't die, as soon as he's able to go to confession, you know, individually, he has an obligation to do that. Some people imagine that if they receive general absolution, then that's all there is to it. It's not. It still requires going to the sacrament of confession at some point in the future. Unfortunately, you know, seminary formation may be a little bit uneven from one seminary to another, and in the sacramental classes that are taught, maybe it was never properly taught to the seminarians, and that's what they were told. Hey, if you have a lot of people and there's not enough time, just go ahead and give general absolution. That's not what the church says, and a lot of people can be confused. So as to your question, I have to take a break, but as to your question, if you feel in your conscience that you should say something and you don't, and there's enough of an opportunity to say something and the situation is serious enough and you have some reason to say something, then yeah, I think if you failed to do that in some form, could be an email, could be a face-to-face conversation. But if you fail to do that in some form and your conscience is convicting you of that, then I would bring that to confession because your conscience is telling you, you know, you should have done it and you didn't. Where that line is, it's hard to tell sometimes. And it's not always easy to know whether the prudent thing to do is to take it up with the priest afterward or to leave it be. But if you have an opportunity to say something, and again, even by email, I would say if you're going to make a mistake, I would make a mistake on that side of things. If it turns out during your exit interview and the Lord gets to that line item on the clipboard and he says, oh, by the way, Aaron, that one time that you told a priest he shouldn't have given general absolution, you didn't really need to do that. But attaboy, you know, your zeal is admirable. So if you're going to make a mistake, I would probably want to make a mistake in that direction as opposed to saying, well, I could have said something and I didn't. Well, I can't say anything more right now because I have to take a break. Thank you, Aaron. I'm coming right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show. The number to dial to be on the program, 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.
Relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Cyrus, there's something I haven't told you that happened last week. Huh? And it's actually a serious issue, and I want to share it with you. Do you remember? Well, of course you remember. 10 days ago or so, I told you about how I had just witnessed somebody get hit by a car.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so it was downtown Tempe, Arizona, and we were at the intersection, and I was thinking about it at the time, and I think I said that we were like one car back from the front of the intersection. It turns out we were actually at the crosswalk. And, you know, I don't know why I thought there might have been a car ahead of us, but there wasn't. My wife reminded me that there wasn't. It was just we were right there. A guy comes walking across the crosswalk. A woman comes from the right into the intersection, and she plows right into him. And he did a somersault in the air, landed on the pavement, and amazingly, he was fine. It was shocking. It was upsetting, quite frankly. It happened again.
No way.
Before we left Phoenix. It happened again. A different scenario. It happened on Saturday night, this past Saturday night. So Nancy and I were driving back to our place. And a young woman of about 24 years old, I only know this because she told us her age, she was on a motorcycle, and she and apparently her boyfriend were on this motorcycle, and there was a wall along the left side of this road, and the speed limit there was about 50, 55 miles an hour. It was at night, and right in front of our very eyes, she hits the wall, sparks fly, she flies through the air, the bike skids and kind of disintegrates into a million pieces of plastic and chrome and whatnot. She's laying on the pavement. The other guy, the boyfriend, he doesn't crash, but he sort of, you know, quickly gets off his bike and comes running. It happened right in front of us again. So we quickly pull the car over. We get out. I call 911 like I did with the first guy. And thankfully, this woman, she survived. So she wasn't in any danger of death. She had a compound fracture in her hand. So I could see the bone sticking up through, through her hand. Blood all over the place, blood everywhere. I don't know if she broke an arm. I don't know what else happened to her, but she was clearly in a state of shock. But she told us her name. She told us her age. I was on the phone with, you know, the dispatcher. And within 5 minutes or so, maybe less, they had EMTs and a fire truck and police were there. I was really happy to see how quickly they responded to this. But she was in great pain. And, you know, there's nothing I could do for her other than call for help, because it was at night and there was nobody else there. So the boyfriend probably would have called. But in any case, it happened again. Within the space of less than a week, I saw somebody, in this case her, have a terrible accident. And Nancy and I both are like, what does this mean? That in the space of a week, we see two things like that. And I don't know if it means anything, but I've never, ever had that kind of an experience, certainly not back to back, and I wanted to tell you about it.
That is crazy. They come in threes, so careful.
Silence.
That is no, really
you shouldn't
crazy.
Have said that, man. You shouldn't have said that.
I'm speechless. Why was she so close to the wall?
Nancy and I couldn't figure it out. Maybe she was looking at her phone. Maybe she got distracted in some other way. But she veered at 50 miles an hour into the wall to her left, and just, you know, the bike exploded. I don't mean like with flames. It just kind of like disintegrated. Yeah. There was just bits and pieces all over the road. She was
wearing a helmet, I take
yeah,
it?
Yeah, she was, thankfully. She would have been dead if she hadn't worn a helmet. And she survived, and she was sitting on the pavement, blood everywhere.
She's lucky to be alive.
Oh, gosh, yes. She wouldn't be alive if she didn't have that helmet on. I don't think.
Motorcycles are so dangerous. I see people flying by on motors. You know, I'm going 75, 80, and I get passed in a blink of an eye by a guy on a motorcycle weaving in and out of traffic. It's like, well, he's not long for the world.
Sad to say, but anyway, so this is just an oddity. That the first one was odd enough. The second one happening within the space of a week, right before our very eyes again, just reinforced what I thought and said on the show when I talked about that first incident with the guy getting plowed into by the driver. You know, you never know how your life will change in the blink of an eye. From one moment to the next, your life can change so radically, like it did for that girl. I don't know if she was under the influence. I mean, there's no way to know anything about it. So, but at the very least, she's going to be in a cast for a good long time, probably physical therapy, and who knows. But it was just another eerie reminder to Don't take things for granted. Life changes in an instant.
And don't
always be ready.
And don't cross the street in front of Patrick Madrid.
You just don't drive near me. You know, two times, I don't want a third time. I don't want to see anything like that again. When you see somebody
You imagine the paramedics coming up and be like, before we work on you, can we see your vaccination status, please?
You know, that's not far-fetched. We've seen stories in the news recently about people needing a heart transplant or some other organ transplant and being denied the transplant because, you're not vaccinated. Sorry, you don't get the, you don't get the heart. So let's not get started on that.
Yeah, right. Sorry, I shouldn't open that door.
So I'm guessing you're never going to want to drive with me around.
Never.
Right?
Never. Yeah, you and Drew. Drew's also notorious for something always happens on every one of his trips. Something like he gets something stolen, he gets in a car accident. So every single time. Like, I'm never traveling with you, Drew, ever.
Wow.
So, and as All long right. as I'm in the car with you, I should be fine. I just don't want to be around, outside of the vehicle if you're traveling.
So, I get
right.
it.
I should get it right.
All right. Well, that's it. That's my story. Story time is over. Let's go to Judy now in Audubon, New Jersey. Good morning, Judy. Thank you for your patience and welcome.
Oh, thank you. You guys have me laughing so hard. I really count on your counsel, and I'm positive that you're guided by the Holy Spirit. I have three questions real quick, and I'll hang up and let you respond. I was touched by all your callers, and I'm going to keep them in my prayers. As to Bethany earlier regarding abortion, I recommend, if she's still listening, that she consult the Catholic Church and try to get into the Rachel's Vineyard Ministry. It is certainly healing and will help her enormously.
Yes.
The second thing is, in baptism, now I'm anxious. What happens to the soul who isn't baptized correctly? No one else there recognizes it or is paying attention. And how does God see this if it's not valid? It seems like it's unfixable because you can't baptize somebody again if nobody realizes there was an error. So,
right.
And the baby doesn't know, so it's never corrected. So what happens to that soul? And how would God see this? The second question.
Let's take the first one first, only because I might forget the first one by the time we get done with the second one. So God, of course, is sovereign and can give grace to whomever he wants, however he wants. We are bound by the rules that Jesus made for us. Jesus established the sacrament of confession as the normative means for entering into the church. But look at him on the cross. He gave forgiveness and salvation to the good thief on the cross as he wished to do, even though the good thief was never baptized. So for us, if it's possible to be baptized, it's incumbent upon us to be baptized. It's necessary for salvation if you are able to be baptized. But what about all those people, whether it's because they didn't know that it was an invalid baptism or they just never had an opportunity to be baptized because of where they lived or when they lived? So the church also says that because God wills all men to be saved and come to a knowledge of the truth, as it says in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 4, that there must be some means known to God alone whereby he can give grace to these people as he wishes. So in the case of somebody who sincerely believed for all those years that he had been baptized and had received the other sacraments, obviously the Lord takes all of that into account. And he's not going to say, sorry, you go to hell because, yeah, I know you loved me and I know you prayed and I know you went to communion and I know you did all the other things, but it was invalid. Ha ha, joke's on you. Obviously God doesn't do that. So what the church says is we entrust those people to God's love and his mercy with the firm belief that as he wishes to grant grace to people, however he wishes to do so, that he would do that. Now, the church can't say in any given situation what the Lord may or may not do, but just simply says we trust in God's love and mercy. So we know that he'll do the very best thing.
That's in terms of salvation, but what about the beatific vision?
Well, they're one and the same thing. Salvation and the beatific vision are the same thing. When you're saved in the final sense of the word, that means that you're in heaven with God and you're experiencing the beatific vision.
Okay. Can you still hear me?
I can,
okay,
yes.
Your voice got... Okay. Thank you. The next question was, where am I at here?
Was it on that same topic?
I thought that an obstinate belief in a heresy like abortion, mm-hmm. and this is not for Bethany, caused an immediately self-imposed excommunication.
That's a canon law question. I'll have to leave it at that, Judy. There are certain canonical crimes that one can commit. Abortion is one of them. If you procure an abortion, that does cause an automatic excommunication. And there are similar crimes involving heresy, but I'll have to leave that for another time. I'm out of time, unfortunately. I hope that was helpful. I'll be right back with Hour 3 right after this.
I'll be back.